Good morning, Your Honor. It's Dennis McCurdy for the State of Washington, the respondent in this case. I would ask this court to find that the information charging felony stalking meets the minimal constitutional requirements of notice and that the defendant was apprised with reasonable certainty of the accusations against her that was sufficient to allow her to prepare a defense. Now, I'll start with saying I'm not here to argue what is the best practice. Maybe this information, the charging document, should have included more specificity, but it did not. What I'm here to argue is what is constitutionally required.
What would have said, though, would have listed all five orders?
Well, the lawyer answered yes and no. It is clear from reading the transcript that the parties were both, the defense and the prosecution, were both under the understanding the stalking provision was primarily based on a single no-contact order, that out of the King County Superior Court no-contact order. And I might add, well,
why were the other four presented?
The other four were presented based on the prosecutor's argument that those showed knowledge that all of the conduct that the defendant was engaging in was unwanted by Mr. Wiseman. And she says that at the time. At that time, then, the defense wants a limiting instruction. Now, the limiting instruction, I admit, as defense counsel points out in their briefing, the limiting instruction was poorly written. It was written by the defense and essentially did not limit the consideration of those no-contact orders. But in reality, they were admitted for a limited purpose. They were relying on the order issued out of King County Superior Court. And I would indicate in my brief I caught an error this morning on page 6. I said that the order that I'm referring to, which is cause number 11204606, was issued out of Seattle Muni Court. In reality, it was issued out of King County Superior Court. All of the other orders were issued out of Seattle Muni.
Let me give you a hypothetical, and it will illustrate our concern.
Sure.
You've got two orders instead of five, and you've got allegations that there were five acts that violated one of the two orders. Six jurors agree that one act violated the first order and one act violated the second order. Six other jurors agree that there was a violation of the first order, but they have different conduct violating the first order, and they don't find any violation of the second order. So they only all agree that there is one act violating one order, but as the jury was instructed, they can find a violation on two occasions. We just don't know from the instructions, and in my hypothetical, we know that they didn't agree that there were two acts and that they were the same acts.
Well, that goes back, that's going into the unanimity area.
That's right.
There may be issues that can be raised when you have questions, hypothetical questions like you have there. But the question is not a unanimity issue because the act or the acts the defendant committed, not the orders. It's the acts. This is not a multiple acts case. We could not charge two counts of stalking. If we did, the case would get reversed on double jeopardy grounds.
Don't you need two acts to prove an element of the crime, two violations of an order?
Absolutely.
And doesn't the jury have to agree as to the same two violations?
I would disagree with that because that's the same as go to the Furseth case, the child pornography case I cited. It's no different than that situation. The defense in that case argued, well, we don't know which photographs they relied upon. Some of them are not child pornography. This court said, doesn't matter. We don't have to know which acts the jury relied upon. They are told what they must find, and that is a unit of prosecution. And the unit of prosecution in that case is that the defendant possessed child porn. In this case, the jury is instructed. They must find the defendant stalked Mr. Wiseman, that she committed at least two acts. The fact that it's two under the statute as opposed to, I guess, one under pornography doesn't change the analysis for unit of prosecution, and it doesn't change the analysis for unanimity. Now, you might raise different questions. The defense, you know, whether it's a due process violation or sufficiency evidence or some other issue that they can raise. But unanimity isn't the issue that needs to be raised in that case. Because we don't delve into, just like whether it's one incident or 100 incidents, where the unit of prosecution, and I would cite to, I think, the better example from the questions you had is witness tampering. Witness tampering, you could argue, and the state did argue in front of the Supreme Court in State v. Hall, that once a defendant tampers with a witness, that is the unit of prosecution. And if he does it again a week later, we can charge a second count. The Supreme Court said no at that time. Now the statute has been amended. But that's just like the situation here. You have a continuing offense. You can only charge one count. There isn't a unanimity issue involved. And I don't really know how.
Unanimity issue as to the stalking, but the additional element of violating the no contact order is what I'm concerned about. The statute reads that the stalking violates any protective order protecting the person stalked. That's how to make convert it into a felony. So it's as if you have to prove the stalking, which is a continuing course of conduct crime. Then you have to show that stalking or that conduct violated a no contact order.
Any,
although in the instruction it says A, but but a no contact order. That sounds fairly specific, and it sounds like it's saying that there's a particular one. But that's and would it, if that's the case, would it not have to be identified in the jurors, be unanimous about that particular no contact order?
How the jury instruction may have read is not been raised before this court. I'm simply going under the statute, and the statute, I think, is very clear. It isn't, and that's one of the distinguishing features with violation of contact order. That has to be a specific order. It doesn't for stalking. And the reason is pretty clear, because stalking behavior, a lot of the behavior that constitutes stalking may not meet particular provisions of the statute. For example, it's also elevated for a felony if the defendant was armed with a deadly weapon. Well, that doesn't mean that every single act that constitutes the stalking, that he had to be armed. It just means that his stalking behavior, at some point, he had to be armed with a deadly weapon. You can have stalking behavior that overlaps the issuance of a no-contact order, for example. So the first month of stalking, there is no-contact order in place. But then he continues after a no-contact order is in place. That's still elevated to a felony. The initial no-contact order, stalking behavior, isn't in violation of a no-contact order, but it's still part of the stalking, and it's still elevated because some of those acts, in fact, are in violation of a no-contact order.
But which no-contact order?
Well, first of all, the statute says it can be any, because you can have multiple orders in stalking. It's not a singular order. But the second thing is, in terms of unanimity, that's not the act. It's not a multiple fact case. It has to be a multiple acts case, and the acts are the acts of stalking. A piece of paper is not an act. The court simply has to find the jury simply has to find that the behavior the defendant engages in over the entire course of whatever the state has charged is the stalking behavior, that some of that behavior.
Multiple acts have to, at least on two occasions, violate a protection order.
Correct.
What if the jury doesn't agree internally as to which order was violated?
That's the same difference in all of the unanimity cases when you're dealing with unit of prosecution. You never know what they've agreed upon. If the unit of prosecution is the entire course of conduct, that's all the jury has to find. In FIRSEF, what if some of the jurors, six jurors, said this picture is pornography, and the six jurors said it wasn't, and the same number on a different photograph? Court said, we don't delve into that. We don't look into that when the unit of prosecution is all of it together. I know it complicates it. It seems to conceptually complicate it because the statute requires two events, so to speak. But that doesn't change the analysis under the unanimity instruction and the unanimity case law. Unless the court's got any more questions, my time is up. Thank you.
I think picking up with the child porn example that the state has provided, I think the difference in Judge Leach's example is that in your scenario, the contraband was kept at a particular location. The defendant went, observed the contraband, went home, and went back. But that's a circumstance in which constructive possession continues all the way through. So I think, again, it is distinguishable from the...
I can modify the hypothetical.
Well, and I'll keep dancing, but I think the stalking statute, which then identifies specific conduct, it can be in the form of harassment, it can be in the form of following, it can be in the form of watching from a distance, it can be in all of these particular forms, but it requires two. It could continue and include multiple acts in between.
Do you agree with opposing counsel that you couldn't have multiple counts? Someone violates the order twice in the month of December, then in February they violate the same order two more times, and then in May, orders expired, but they have a firearm. Could be, there be three counts?
I believe so. I don't see anything in the statute which would preclude it, because you have conducted the, you have committed the offense, you have done the necessary things. I mean, what ultimately separates many of these is a change in the mental state of the defendant. That's what we see in ongoing course of conduct sort of cases, fraud cases, and those sorts of things. That is a change in the demeanor or the acts or the conduct of the defendant, and that occurs repeatedly here. She's there over this 2 or 3 year period in which she's arrested, she redirects her focus, she goes on to other things, then returns back. Those are separate periods, and the state is free. There's nothing in this statute which bars them from doing it to the extent that they can identify a distinction between the two, and it occurs in different times, different places, different victims ultimately in this particular case. So the scope of an application is very important in this particular case, and it's important that the jury be unanimous in the agreement of it. And I think the witness intimidation is equally unavailing here, because the witness intimidation, at least the case law that was subsequently overturned, was based on the unit of prosecution in those particular cases being the prosecution itself. So you are attempting to influence the prosecution, not necessarily, therefore, criminalizing each individual event. That's the way the legislature chose to do it. I believe that the statute in this particular case gives it the same gravitas, and ultimately it was for the jury to determine. They should have been instructed on unanimity. They should have been required themselves to do it. It's a messy process, I am sure, but it is one that is constitutionally guaranteed and is appropriate under this circumstance, where the state relies on such a wide grab bag of conduct and orders. And the state specifically identified all five orders in the context of closing argument and encouraged the jury to rely on that, and then hundreds and hundreds of acts of conduct, both phone calls and everything else. She was entitled to unanimity on that, and we asked the court to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is detention of ACP.